Well, now on Life Matters, a man who has dedicated his story to the innocence and beauty of childhood, despite experiencing anything but. Not everyone gets off first base with the support of a healthy, loving, peaceful family. So essential, isn't it, to a happy, balanced sense of self as we grow up. Sometimes families are toxic, brutally so. And the hurdles in my next guest's life, early life, are almost unimaginable, starting at the tender age of 17 months when he and his four siblings were deposited at the Sydney Metropolitan Children's Court to subsequently become wards of the state. Dr. Michael Davey knows the inside of way too many institutions and foster homes for one little boy to bear, I think. He's not a little boy anymore, though, which is what makes the title of his new biography especially impressive, Journey to Hope. Michael Davey, Dr. Michael Davey now. Welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning. How are you?
I know you've driven up the coast to be with us today. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
It was 1959. Let's head back. And your father, Malcolm, sat on the front steps and watched you and your four older siblings be carted off in a taxi, deemed neglected children. And you were put into children's homes and then a foster home. You probably don't remember that day. What do you remember from that time?
My first memory was when my father came to visit me in foster care, and I was about 4 or 5 years old at the time.
Four years later?
Yeah, so a lot of those things from when I was very young are a blur, and I can't remember them. But I remember seeing him for the first time, and I was absolutely thrilled to see my dad from a foster home.
But he left again?
Yes, that's right. He came and saw me every 12 to 18 months, and I remember seeing him three times before he kidnapped me from foster care.
Why were you put into foster care?
My mother was a severe schizophrenic. She was delusional and quite paranoid, and she was very violent towards my younger sister and myself because she could never bond with us. We were born after her schizophrenia developed, and so we were taken out of her care.
You were placed in a foster... You actually only met your mother again well down the track.
When I was... Just before my 10th birthday, I first met her that I could remember.
And we'll come to that experience, but in the meantime, you were placed in a foster family as a young child in a what you describe as a small hell house at the end of a dirt road out of Eden. And Mrs. Ferntree and her husband Clive, not their real names, were your foster parents. But this was a hellish experience for you, wasn't it? It really left me thinking when I was reading the book, why did these people want to foster you if they were going to abuse you?
It's hard to understand. I think at those times there were some people who knew where to go to get what they wanted, and my foster uncle was doing things to me that a man should never do to a boy, and my foster father was doing things to my best friend who lived next door that a man should never do to a girl. And I was 6 years old at the time and she was 8, and regrettably we acted that out for a number of years because we thought that was just normal behaviour. And I was quite a delinquent in their care, and I was stealing my foster mother's jewellery and selling it at school and stealing their money, and I had to be taken out of their care and placed in an institution because it was commonly regarded by a child psychologist and others that I would never adjust to another foster family. So thankfully I was taken from their care and placed in an institution.
You didn't tell any other adults about what was going on, about the sexual abuse though, did you?
Look, I spoke to the welfare officers, the social welfare officers, but we were never believed. And Kevin Rudd's apology in 2009...
Which you attended.
I was there for that. And he acknowledged that often the things that happened to us as kids were never believed. We were never listened to adequately. And there were some fairly horrific things that happened to forgotten Australians, people who grew up in church or state care.
Back in state care then, Royalston Boys Home.
That's right. Yeah.
Run by the New South Wales State Government in Sydney. I mean, confrontingly, you were tested for STDs. You were too young to know what was going on then.
The first time that happened, I was 7 years old, and the Child Welfare Act of 1939 stipulated that children, wards of the state who come out of foster homes, had to be tested for those diseases because it wasn't uncommon for children to be carriers of those diseases.
Because they'd been abused.
That's right. Yes.
And they knew it.
Yes.
Yeah. So even in this home, surrounded by boys, there was a deep sense of isolation, wasn't there? But also unity.
Indeed there was. It was almost as if we were bands of brothers. And as a young child, I was looking for love in a family situation. I hadn't found it in my foster family. I knew it existed with my dad, and my foster grandparents were good people, so I felt it there. But the first time I really experienced love in a family situation was at Royalston Boys Home, because the boys, we were like a band of brothers who cared for each other, looked out for each other. And I think it started with a couple of very caring ward officers at the at Ralston Boys Home, and also at Sunday school, where we were allowed out of the home on Sundays. And there were some wonderful people who used to look after us and make us morning tea. And
describe that love of a band of brothers that you found at the boys' home.
It was a situation where there was a boy when I was there for my last 3 month stint, just before I was 10 years old, when my dad came in. Well, I went home with my family. And we had supervisors that used to spend too much time in the showers with us. And Mick, who I met, was a boy that felt that that shouldn't happen. And I felt that that shouldn't happen as well. And so we banded together and we tried as best we could to spend as little time in the showers as possible. There were also rumours of boys being taken away on weekends and having horrible things done to them.
By foster carers?
Just by people who could come and take their kids away for the weekend. And I didn't want to go to those places, be in that situation. I just wanted to be home with my family, with my dad, who I knew I loved.
At one point, this is a little bit earlier, but your father kidnaps you.
Did you know
that he was kidnapping you?
I didn't understand
this
completely.
This is from foster care.
That's right.
Back at the fern trees.
This is when I was 9 years old. I didn't truly understand it at the time, but I was able to piece it together because my dad never spoke about it, even as an adult to me. I only was able to piece it together fully when I read my Department of Community Services file, which I accessed a couple of years ago from DOCS. And it was a document that was 150, maybe 160 pages in length, A4 pages. It was a very thick book of all the things that had happened to me in that time and where I'd been. It was a diary of events, if you like.
So this is actually what you fed into this book, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. There are a number
of
things.
Accessing of the file.
There are a number of things that I've been able to get out of the Department of Community Services file and put into the book, and it pieced things together for me. And my sisters were also wards of the state on two separate occasions, once before I was born, and then when I was 17 months old. And my elder sister, who I'm especially close to, even to this day, has many years of her childhood she doesn't remember at all. But if she was to go and get her file, which she doesn't want to do, she would be able to find out where she was and what was happening in those years.
Michael, for you, what did accessing that file make sense of?
Well, I can remember when I was in the DOCS office where I live, I had it put in front of me, and it was a photocopy of the original document. And tears flooded my cheeks when I read these things that I hadn't thought about from when they'd happened. And there was great sadness, and there was a remarkable amount of emotion evoked in that situation. And so, if you like, it was a catharsis to find it and then to read it. And it was especially healing in a lot of senses because I could see my sisters' lives in front of me. I could see my brother's life in front of me that I'd never experienced, because I didn't find out I had a brother and three sisters until my father had kidnapped me and he told me about them.
Dr. Michael Davey is my guest on ABC Radio National's Life Matters. I'm Natasha Mitchell. His new book is Journey of Hope. And my God, is it a journey of hope. At one point, you stop being a ward of the state and you head back to your family. Your dad, Malcolm, takes you back in. You meet your mother, Patricia. I think it's in the late 60s, early 70s.
That's right. It was 1967.
Her physical brutality against you, the scenes in this book are very difficult to read. And I can't imagine how you processed that, how you made sense of, you know.
It was especially difficult living with my mother because she, I wanted to come home to be with her, but her schizophrenia meant that she'd rejected me and hated me. She blamed me for her illness. In reality, I should never have been allowed to come home with her, but because I couldn't survive in an institution or in a foster home because I was too much of a delinquent, I had to come home. And it was really hard for me to understand how she could hate me, and I internalised that. Mm. She used to punch me in the face and hit me across the head with a saucepan or a frying pan. And she had a shortened broom handle that she called a pot stick, and she'd thrash me with it. And so it was only as an adult that I came to a true understanding of my mother and her schizophrenia. It wasn't her fault. She had no control over that.
But your father wasn't intervening. It was almost happening when he was never there, but he would have known, I would imagine.
He was a good man, but he was permissive. And he was an alcoholic workaholic, and that's how he coped with my mother's schizophrenia. And so a lot of the bad stuff happened with my mother when my dad wasn't there, unfortunately.
Yet, Michael, what really struck me is that you felt this pull back to your family despite your mother's abuse of you, despite a fairly tawdry situation and an unloving situation. You kept feeling that pull back to kin.
One of the reasons for writing the book is to celebrate the wonder and the beauty of friendships and family in childhood. And I in foster care, I longed and longed and longed to be with my mother. But to find out that she hated me and rejected me was heartbreaking and heart-wrenching, in fact, quite harrowing. But as an adult, I clearly understood that it wasn't her fault. And I, however naive it may be, I was hoping that one day she could be cured of her schizophrenia. And knowing that she didn't have any control over it, I was able to forgive her, and so I was able to love her.
But it took you into some very dark places, and in fact you write about your experience over 12 years. I mean, ironically, you find the love of a beautiful woman, Bonnie, and you have children in this time too, but you entered a very dark place for a very long time, didn't you?
Indeed.
Depression and anxiety and panic attacks.
That's right. What I hadn't understood was that significant abuse that I had experienced at the hands of my mother, and especially in the homes as well, and also in foster care, obviously, had came back to visit me as an adult. And there was a lot of bitterness and rage and anger and resentment that I had internalised, and it had to come out. And that's how it expressed itself in this 12-year depressive episode, which was precipitated by a fear of academic failure. When I went to university, I was there for 2 weeks. I ran away afraid of failing.
You hadn't done too good at school, so I can understand that fear in some sense. But you did find something. I mean, you got a PhD in chemistry.
Indeed. It's really funny how if you're a delinquent, you don't succeed academically. The two things don't go hand in hand. And so as an adult, I struggled to finish my HSC, to do my HSC as a mature age student, because I'd left school at the end of year nine. And it took me 6 years to finally get through the HSC. And then when I finally got to university, I ran away. But then 3 years later, I decided to go back and face my fear of failing. And I discovered within 2 years that I had quite a flair for it. And I was getting high distinctions in maths and
not
physics.
Not a flair for failing, a flair for success.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised by that. And it was a remarkable turnaround in a lot of senses, because I could never understand anything of academic nature except under the guidance of an outstanding school teacher who was my English teacher in year 8 at Bankstown Boys High School, good old Mr. Rosser.
Those key figures in difficult lives, hey. Were you scared to have children?
I was. I'm happy to say, and I say this in the epilogue, that I had a very high chance of being an abuser myself. Instead, I'm happy to say that I broke the cycle.
Your kids write in this book, and it's really striking to read their essays and reflections on your life when they actually found out where you'd been. And
they didn't know until I was 14 years old, and I'm very humbled that they decided and
until
wanted...
Until they were 14 years old.
So I beg your pardon, yeah, until they were 14 years old. And I was very humbled by what they wrote, and it's really interesting when I look at the pages of the book from where I've come from to see the effect that I've had in the lives of my children. So in a lot of senses, I've been blessed very much as a parent.
Why did you want to tell this story? And I must say, the other thing that it seems, I mean, being a parent has allowed you to rewrite your past in a sense, but good humour too. Cheeky humour, mischievous humour.
Indeed, that's pretty much it. I was always that class clown in school because I could never understand anything of an academic nature to any great extent, so I just was a class clown, and that's how I got attention.
Why did you want to write the book?
Look, I read it for three reasons. One, to celebrate that wonder of family and friendships in childhood. Two, to highlight the plight of children in foster care. And three, to destigmatise depression and encourage people who have or are suffering from depression to get help if they need help.
Dr. Michael Davey, congratulations on the new book, Journey for Hope, published by Ark House Press. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And on ABC Radio National, this is Life Matters with me, Natasha Mitchell, this week. And look, you might resonate with Michael Davey's story. I certainly did. From your own experiences, from others, and we'd love to hear your reflections. Join us on our website, abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters, or on the Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you.